This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. If you've been following space news, you know by now that NASA's Orion space capsule successfully went into orbit, orbited the Earth twice, splashed down in the Pacific Ocean 4.5 hours later. A test flight NASA called Picture Perfect. The launch was an early test for the Orion crew capsule. There were no people on board this time, and was mainly designed to test how the craft responds during stages of liftoff, flight, and reentry, and especially reentry at 20,000 miles per hour. Orion is designed to take up to 4 people in space sometime in the 2020s. I wouldn't hold my breath. Joining me now is Eric Berger, science reporter for the Houston Chronicle. He's the author of Adrift, a recent series on the future of the space industry. And he joins us from WUCF in Orlando and just coming back from the launch this morning. Welcome to Science Friday.
It's my pleasure, Ira. Thank you.
Was it picture perfect?
Well, the launch wasn't exactly picture perfect. There were a lot of clouds, and so it kind of masked some of the effects of dawn. NASA wanted to launch it in the morning because they wanted to make sure that it looked really good when the rocket went up. I will say that the landing was pretty striking there in the Pacific Ocean with the parachutes coming out. You know, for the younger generation, people, you know, 40 and under, you know, we never really saw the Apollo capsules coming back and splashing down. We're used to the space shuttle. So it was kind of something new and something exciting to see a spacecraft come back from space that way.
Yeah, this was sort of back to the future, wasn't it?
It was definitely back to the future. NASA has gone back to technology that it perfected in the 1960s in terms of building big rockets and Apollo-like capsules to, you know, basically blast into space, throw everything away, and come back with your people and a small capsule.
But isn't that going against the grain of where the progressive space is? You have Elon Musk and his people and other people trying to come up with a recyclable, reusable spacecraft?
So, yeah, there's a lot of these companies, these new space companies. It's not just SpaceX. There's people like X-Corp and companies like that who kind of see, you know, really want to open up space. They want to bring more people into space. And the only way they see to do that is to really cut the cost of access to space. And they do that by maybe building smaller rockets, but more importantly, building reusable rockets. So that is you launch, when you launch a rocket, 2 or 3% of your cost is fuel. The rest of it is in the actual rocket. So if you can recover that booster, if you can recover those engines, you know, you can really cut down the cost of getting into space. And so all of these companies are kind of going that way, whereas NASA has gone back and retreated from the space shuttle, which was partly reusable, to a vehicle that is not reusable at all. And actually what's interesting is the Space Launch System, the rocket that NASA is building as part of its next generation of vehicles, uses space shuttle main engines, and it has some engines left over from the space shuttle program. But it's just going to put them on the rocket, launch once, and they're going to be thrown away.
844-724-8255 is our number. So let's talk about the future plans for Orion. How much they're talking about, NASA's talking about going to an asteroid, then about going possibly to Mars. President's talked about going to Mars. How much money have we allocated for those?
So right now, all of NASA's exploration budget is going into building the Space Launch System rocket and the Orion space capsule, and then retrofitting some facilities at Kennedy Space Center to launch these vehicles. The problem is that these are pretty expensive vehicles to maintain, and so once you've built them, you still have some ongoing costs, especially for the rocket. And so unless NASA gets a substantial increase in its exploration budget, it's going to have a great rocket, it's going to have a great spacecraft, but it's not really going to have the money to go use it, because if you want to go to the moon or if you want to go to Mars, you have to build all kinds of things. You have to build landers. You have to build propulsion systems. You have to build power systems to survive on the ground. You have to build some kind of mechanism to get back from the ground. You have to build rovers. There's all these other technologies that NASA is going to need to go somewhere that it's just not building because it doesn't have the budget to do so.
Does it look like it might get the budget in any near future?
Well, you know, one of the problems is that the spaceflight community has been waiting ever since the 1960s for the next President Kennedy to come along and give them an Apollo-style budget. You know, back in those days, when they were going full guns, they were getting about 4.5% of the federal budget. Today, that percentage has dropped down closer to 0.4% of the federal budget. And if you go back and look at surveys over time, the American public generally thinks that NASA is getting about enough money. So it seemed a little bit of a stretch to think that maybe they're going to get that increase in budget. What NASA's hoping is that the public is going to be swayed by, man, wasn't this an awesome launch today? Doesn't that spacecraft look beautiful coming back to Earth? Isn't the SLS rocket great? shouldn't we get some more money to actually go out and use them? And that's kind of what they're betting on in 4 or 5 years.
So, but then there would have to be some positive hangover from this launch. Another, you know, the next launch isn't for, what, another 4 years?
The next launch is at least another 4 years away, and it certainly has already slipped some, and it may slip some more. And you're actually not talking about putting people on Orion until 2021 or 2022 at the earliest. So it kind of is a long time, and one of the problems with NASA, too, is you get a new president, you get a new Congress, they come in and they change their minds about what the space program is doing. So it's going to be kind of a long road for them to even get to those next two flights, I think.
Well, I hate to be cynical about this, but this launch then is a launch to nowhere. Talk me out of that. Talk me off the ledge on this one.
Come back to us, Ira. you could have a glass half full or a glass half empty approach. And the kind of the glass half full approach is, yeah, NASA is building some unique capabilities here, and we're going to bring on some international partners. Maybe we'll continue partnering with Russia. Maybe we'll bring China in or India in. There's new money, new interest, and we'll kind of all agree on an exploration plan and kind of go out and do that over the next 15 or 20 years. That's kind of the hopeful plan. The more negative plan, I think maybe where you're coming from, is that in building these old-style rockets and capsules, NASA's kind of keeping senators happy where these field centers are because it keeps jobs in their district. They're keeping contractors happy because you've got the Lockheed Martins, the Boeings. These are companies that have partnered with NASA for 50 years, have longstanding contracts, and have, you know, the aerospace industrial complex is kept happy by building SLS and Orion. And so the cynical person would say, well, they're just kind of perpetuating this, and they don't really care that they're not going anywhere because they're kind of keeping the port flowing. But, you know, if you talk to the people at NASA, and I spent a lot of time doing that over the last year, they certainly don't feel that way. And they want a chance to show off the hardware they're building, and today was their first real opportunity to do that.
Yeah. You know, my point is, if you're going to be serious, and you mentioned that you need another JFK to come in there and say, here's the money, here's how we do it, and these are the steps, and you weren't around during the space race when I was. And you know that you had goals that you were going to hit every year or two, every 6 months, every 18 months. You're going to have another rocket, another test, you're going to go, you know, move up from all the way to Gemini from the early Mercury. You had a plan, you had it set in, you had Congress, you had the money, you had the ideas, you had the people. And we don't have that, you know?
Let me give you an example to illustrate that point precisely that you just made. So the mission today was they flew up 3,600 miles into space and then splashed down the Pacific Ocean. They wanted to test the heat shield. Back in 1967, NASA flew Apollo 4. This was the first time the Apollo capsule had flown on the new Saturn V rocket that eventually would take people to the moon. That was in late 1967. They went up about 9,000 miles this time, a little bit higher, came back really the same kind of mission profile. Less than 2 years later, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were walking on the moon.
2 years later. We're talking about exactly.
2 years later.
That's right.
So, yeah, there's no pressure. There's no space race. And so we're kind of waiting for someone to come along. We're really waiting for NASA's goals to kind of realign with the national interests.
Or someone to beat us to the moon. Because we talk about Mars and the asteroids, but there are other countries that are talking about going to the moon first and then maybe to Mars.
That would be almost every other country in the world that's interested in spaceflight. None of these other countries went to the moon, but I think there's a recognition that the moon is a more tangible goal, at least in the near term. For one, it's close. Two, if there's a problem, you get your people back within 2 or 3 days usually. And the third thing is, you know, the Apollo astronauts were really only on the surface of the moon. They only had a few hours, really, to kind of go out and explore. You go talk to these guys, and they're like, man, we never had enough time. There was always another rock. There was always another ridge we wanted to go over and see what was there. And the moon looks barren and desolate. And, yeah, it is. There's no atmosphere. But in the poles, there's water in the form of ice. And in the moon itself, the lunar surface, there's all these, you know, there's silica, there's minerals, there's resources, there's lots of interesting things you could do if you went back to the moon. And so, you know, while NASA's kind of fixated on going to Mars, the countries like China, the world, they're landing rovers on the moon. They're talking about doing a lunar sample return mission maybe in about 10 years. And the next step for them is to put taikonauts on the surface of the moon.
Mm-hmm. You know, you hear radio astronomers talk about, if you ask them what's their big wish, they'll say, hey, if you could put a giant radio telescope facing on the, you know, away from the Earth, that's always facing and sweeping the galaxies, and we wouldn't have that interference from cell phones and all kinds of stuff to deal with. why not build one of those? Build a, you know, go to the moon to do that and build the radio telescope and have a joint mission with NASA and NSF and all these other people who might chip in for it and other countries who might use it. And you'd have a real purpose in going.
It's interesting that you say that. When I was a freshman in astronomy, that was my professor talked to us about the radio telescope on the far side of the moon.
Now you're dating me.
well, that's a great idea, but there's also other things you could do. You could go to the moon and use the resources there to build solar cells because it turns out the silica there you could be fashioned, and you could do that also pretty much autonomously. And you could actually provide a power source back to the surface of the Earth. Another thing is with the water at the poles in the form of ice, you know, when you look at rocket fuel is liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen. There's a ton of rocket fuel. Basically, there's enough fuel on the moon in terms of its ice. You could launch a space shuttle every day for 3,000 years. So the idea is maybe you could go to the moon, manufacture rocket fuel, and kind of use that as a fueling station on the way to Mars or other places deeper in the solar system. But the point is, there are lots of interesting reasons to go back to the moon.
You just need the political will to do that and the visionary that you talk about.
It's interesting. You had the political will back in 2004. President Bush actually had a big plan called Constellation, which was to go back to the moon. And, you know, for a time, NASA had a lot of things going for it because you had first a Republican Congress and then a Democratic Congress. Both got behind this idea of going to the moon. But part of the problem was NASA got ambitious. Said, okay, we're going to build a big rocket. We're going to build a capsule that actually Orion had its origins in the Constellation program. But they never kind of got the money they requested. They maybe had bigger ambitions than they could fulfill. And you had this problem where in 2009 the program was so far behind schedule. I think President Obama had almost no choice to really take it apart, and it had to be remade.
Let's go to
now we're in a situation where NASA's again building a big rocket, building a spacecraft, but doesn't have the budget to fulfill its ambitions. There's a big concern in the spaceflight community that this is all going to blow up in NASA's face in another 4 or 5 years.
Let's go to the phones to John in Arlington, Virginia, where they follow the space race pretty closely out there. Hi, John.
Hi. We got our local NASA channel here, so I kind of like to see the rocket launches. The thing of it is that the Obama plan made sense in as far as low gravity well exploration of space. That means you go to small places that you can get to and away from without a lot of special rockets or anything like that, and then that way you can get as far as the asteroid belt. The problem is, of course, it's like going window shopping. You could get the Phobos around Mars, but you couldn't never land on Mars, like going up to New York and looking in the store windows but not being able to go in. This asteroid plan of roping an asteroid, which they don't even know where they're going to get it from, circling it around the moon and have this rocket go up and have the guys examine it. Really, I mean, you know, publicly, it's a great idea. A lot of people don't like it, though. They think it's a waste of time. I'd rather, if they're going to follow this low-gravity well thing, I'd just as soon have them send the rocket out to one of the Lagrange points, where one of these equal-gravity places that are about a couple million miles from Earth. People say, well, that's a ride to nowhere. It really isn't. You could go out there and establish a small space station there and have it a waypoint on the way.
All right, John, I got it. We got the idea. We hear your enthusiasm for it. I gotta drop you because I gotta go to remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI Public Radio International. And you can see, Ed, that there is a tremendous amount of interest in this if you just get this stuff going, I think.
Yeah, that's the problem. I think John makes a good point that the administration has kind of gone with this asteroid retrieval mission. Actually, President Obama initially wanted to send astronauts way out into deep space and actually, fly alongside a larger asteroid far from Earth. The problem is that there was no money in that for the budget, so now it's been kind of rescaled. The only thing that they can afford to do with the rocket and the spacecraft is to send a robotic spacecraft out to bring a rock about the size of your garage and put it in orbit around the moon and then send astronauts to fly formation.
Look how much interest that landing on that asteroid did, just a little robot landing on the asteroid, able to go all the way out there was. You know, tremendous interest. I don't think anybody predicted there'd be that much interest in it. Imagine if you got something, you know, with some real planning and money behind it again.
Yes, people would flock to the space program, and they'd love it. But I think that there's a real reticence in the country to spend a whole lot more on NASA than it's getting, and so there's a sense that maybe NASA should recalibrate its ambitions to the funding it has,
or cooperate maybe with the Europeans or the Chinese, the Russians or the Indians or any of those people.
Well, they're cooperating with the Europeans. They're cooperating with Russia and the space station. That relationship is actually not too bad in terms of, you know, engineer to engineer and agency to agency.
Mm-hmm.
You don't save a whole lot of money when you cooperate, because it actually turns out it takes a lot of money to integrate the system. So, you know, the Europeans are building part of the Orion spacecraft, but it takes a lot of money to kind of to fit mm-hmm. those pieces together. What you do get, and I think what is really important for NASA, is you get stability. The International Space Station, you know, has been around for 20 years, and the main reason for that is we have commitments to our international partners in Russia, we have partners in Japan and Europe and Canada, and we feel like we really can't break our commitments. And so it kind of holds politicians, you know, it kind of keeps them in line and makes them, you know, it stops them from changing the program midstream like you often see with NASA programs.
Mm-hmm. Just finally, and last minute or so that we have, your series is called Adrift. Is that how you feel about where NASA is headed? It's a drift.
Yeah,
lost
unfortunately,
in space.
I didn't want to be that cliche, so I went with a drift. But the idea is that, you know, the space program for some time now really hasn't had, you know, much of a strong direction. It hasn't had strong leadership, and you know the idea is that, you know, we really need to kind of come in and take a look at where we are and put NASA on a course that's sustainable, that everyone agrees to, and that you have enough funding to meet your goals. And unfortunately, I don't think we're in a position where that's the case right now.
Well, we'll stay tuned, Eric. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
My pleasure.
You're welcome. Eric Berger, science reporter for the Houston Chronicle. And you can read Adrift, his recent series on the future of the space industry, on the Houston Chronicle website. Go there and read it. It's quite interesting.